Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
Wednesday nights, you know what that means. I am back, 5-time COVID champion, here on the Mark Order Podcast. I'm with Joe, who, I gotta tell you, if you're listening in audio form, we appreciate it so much, don't get us wrong, but you're missing out on this man's Creed shirt right now. It is incredible. It's a fantastic shirt. I can't even argue that.
I'm just here to keep, you know, to help get you higher.
You know, there are a couple of people who I can't tell if they ironically or unironically love Creed. You are on the cusp leaning ironic, I feel like.
You're correct. Okay. I'll admit that I do own one album.
Which one?
My Own Prison.
Okay. Okay.
Before I realized what they were going to become.
Well, you, Bad Dude Tito, there's several people in my life that I don't know. I don't know. They're on the cusp, I think, leaning ironic. Some people are pretty unapologetic about their Creed love, though, but I can't subscribe.
As a divorcee, I feel like it's in that divorce dad rock music, right? So
that's fair.
I feel like I'm kind of in that genre. So, you know.
Halfway there is close enough. I respect it. We have so much to talk about because this was a great episode of Dynamite. I haven't been here in a couple weeks. We have All Out that happened. We have a new women's champion. We have no Ryan. So this is going to be a great day. But we thank you so much for hanging out in the chat with us. We got Pieces. We got Lord Kev. We got Taylor Cannon. We've got Matthew Hooks. We got Greg Terry. We got Scott George. We got 1LT Photo. I don't have lungs anymore, sadly, but I'm doing my best. But we are going to plow through this episode a little quicker than normal. No commercial break. This is being brought to you ad-free. This is a commercial-free first hour/hour and however long this goes, because we're not doing commercials. But because of that, I will tell you, we are a part of the Shining Wizards Network. There are several shows to listen to on the Shining Wizards Network, including the flagship show, the Shining Wizards Podcast. There's other wrestling shows. There's metal shows. There's horror movie shows. There's all sorts of stuff to check out on the Shining Wizards Network. We would encourage you, if you have interest in these things, to support additional creators, other than us, but mostly us. Mostly us. You know what I mean?
I mean, we're the A show, right?
We are the A show.
We're a show.
We're definitely that. We're definitely that. Joe.
Okay.
Did you have a chance to watch the pay-per-view this weekend?
I didn't.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. I wasn't planning on doing this as a solo show, but here I am. Joe didn't do his homework. What were you doing? Living your life? Enjoying yourself?
I was touching so much grass and...
Fine. Tell us what that's like, Joe.
Well, you see, when you don't become a host for COVID 5 times over, you're able to go out and enjoy life and breathe the natural air through your lungs.
That's what gets me COVID, is being out in the world, unfortunately. But I'm glad you enjoyed your weekend. Did you catch up at all on any of the results, any of the highlights?
I did, yep. So I'm up to date on that.
You know that we got a Jurassic Express reunion?
I did.
Big old hug. Big old hug that happened there.
I see some
a lot bones. Of arm waving.
Yep.
We got some of this back. A good time. Eddie Kingston came back and had a bad match, but I don't care. It was bad. It was not good, but I don't care because Eddie Kingston's back. I think one of the bigger surprises was the return of the Bastard Pack, which I was very glad to see because he's just one of my very favorite workers. But he came back without a wet hair or a ponytail. It was very weird. That was alarming. Images Robinson need to reevaluate.
Yeah, but Zeus is growing his beard back out, right?
Yeah, the hair is going to take a while. The hair is going to take a while for Pac, but a solid pay-per-view, and we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but probably the biggest surprise update was Chris Statlander becoming your Women's World Champion, which I kind of had mixed feelings on how that went down, but I'm very happy for the person and the wrestler that Chris Statlander is. Like, she's been at this a long time, and she's been there from the beginning, and when the division wasn't in the best shape, she was still doing really great work. So I'm very excited to see that. The first ever world and TBS champion as well. So that's just a cool thing. We haven't had that in the women's division yet, somebody holding both belts. So you didn't see it, but any thoughts on kind of the takeaways that we got?
I was not expecting Statlander to win that match. When I saw that result, I was very surprised because I didn't feel like they were building her up to win that match.
Yeah, she didn't really have a claim to the throne that much, as it were. Like, she won a match to get in or whatever, but like it wasn't story driven. And because Toni Storm is so story driven, I thought whoever Toni lost to was going to be like a more extensive one-on-one program for sure.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, I'm trying to think what else of the results I read that jumped out at me. It was nice to see Briscoe win. I thought MJF was going to win that match.
Yeah, that was a nice, I kind of thought it might go that way, but that was definitely like still a surprise in a sense that, Mark Briscoe went over. I liked that choice, especially because it seems like he's going to be gone for a little bit, but he had a great match with Mystico the day before and got his ass from Mexico to Canada in the middle of the night and wrestled this crazy tack match, which is not normally his kind of bread and butter. But yeah, that was a surprise too, for sure.
And then I didn't see the match between Heyman and Fletcher, but was it one of those matches where it was an arrival type of match for Fletcher, or was it just a really solid match?
It was probably somewhere in between, just because like I feel like him and Ospreay have put on such spectacular matches. It's kind of hard to say this was like an arrival match, but it accomplished what it set out to, in my opinion, which was the story was you're not ready to be world champion, but like the story of the match is like, but you're going to be pretty soon, probably, like you're really good at this. So it was a lot of Kyle Fletcher just beating the ever loving dog shit out of Hangman, which was a fun story to tell because Hangman's such a tough badass that seeing him be vulnerable in that way, I found really cool. I think my match of the night, you could really go either way between that and the triple threat with Mascara Dorada and Okada and Takeshita was disgustingly cool. Like, it was so much fun. But to answer your question, I think it was kind of somewhere in between. I think it was a mix of like, this dude is a megastar, but we also kind of already knew that sort of thing. But it was definitely a different story, and I'm excited to see. I feel like we're going to be getting him versus, well, we know we're getting him versus Hologram, but I feel like he's going to be messing around with the conglomeration for a little bit. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about it. Any other questions since you didn't watch?
So is the triple threat, and that's the match I should go back and try to find to watch if I'm going to pick one?
Well, your girl might have a free link for you to watch, so let me just send that to you. But if you are just looking for something that's an absolute fucking blast in ring, I would say that's the one. If you're looking for something that's like, there's definitely a little more meat on the bone story-wise, I feel like, with Fletcher and Hangman, just by the way it was built and the nature of it being a one-on-one match. But like in-ring, you're watching Takeshita and Okada, and Mascara Dorada is such an interesting piece. And I had said this a while back, and I still want it to be true. I would love for the story to be Okada, the greatest tournament wrestler of all time, losing that title to Takeshita because he won the G1 and the C2 in the same year. Like, I think that would be fun. And then you have Takeshita beat Okada for that continental or the unified title. I guess it's not the Continental Classic anymore. It's the unified universal tournament. I don't know what it is, but
it'll always be the C2.
It'll always be. They should just call it the C2 and not have it stand for anything. I love this. Dorado was amazing, like a pesky, flippy mosquito. They did a really good job of having him as an ingredient in that match. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen a triple threat produced the way that one was before. It was really compelling. It was really compelling, but really solid pay-per-view. Really solid pay-per-view. But we'll dive into this episode of Dynamite in a minute. There's not like a ton of news and notes to talk about here. Shibata's not cleared after their tailgate brawl. But the big news is that Gail Kim thinks Rio is small and the internet is very upset about it. She tweeted through it, I gotta say. I also think that Riho is small and sometimes her stuff isn't believable. Some of the stuff that Gail Kim came under fire for, though, was her kind of commenting on her appearance and her gear. And I feel like that's just never, it never leads to anywhere productive. It's just not. Like, I actually am not the biggest Riho fan. I don't think anybody is too small to be a wrestler, but I think like she's not that much smaller than Mercedes, which made this matchup good, by the way, that they had was one of Riho's best, if not best. But the way Mercedes applies her offense makes it way more believable to me. That's just my opinion as a wrestling fan. But she was saying stuff like the cameraman, like this was, these were comments she made years ago. But like the cameraman kind of like upskirting her made her uncomfortable. I was like, well, that camera angle gets used across wrestling all the time. And she is a 28-year-old woman now. So at the time was like a 25, 24-year-old woman, I think, at this point. And I feel like you just get into dangerous territory if you're like, that person is allowed to have that camera angle and that one's not. I wish they just wouldn't do that all the time. I thought it was weird when they did it with Tay Conti. I don't like her, or Tay Mello now. She was Tay Conti at the time. I don't know. I also don't think Gail Kim's a monster for saying such things, but I disagree with the weird parts about like her. She kept calling her a little girl. Like she was in my mentions and called her a little girl. And I was like, that's the part that kind of makes me about this a little. I still have a ton of respect for Gail Kim. I don't think this makes her a monster in any way, but I was very surprised, Joe, because to be honest, I didn't know she followed me. And my account is locked. So when she popped into my replies, I was like, I don't remember her following me at all. But I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on Riho in general? Are you a Riho stan? Are you a hater? Are you somewhere in between?
I'm not a hater. Hater's too strong a word. I'm not. She's not. She's not my favorite. No, to your point, she is a smaller wrestler, and a lot of her moves look that of what we talked about earlier in the chat of being a pesky mosquito, where you kind of like you fly around, you kind of you're buzzing around, you sing here and there, but you're not doing any kind of lasting damage with her moves. And a lot of this hadn't been believable for me. Like, if you're going to win by a quick roll-up or something quick like that, sure.
Sure. But
nothing she lays in is going to hurt you. And, you know, if people have issues with her gear, I mean, she's been wearing that gear for I don't know how long now. Whether it's, you know, inspired by a specific cultural thing. I don't know. And we can do better camera angles, to your point.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something we can take away from all of this is
That's a great point by Jamie. It's awkward regardless of gender. It's weird when they do it on guys too. Randy Orton's gotten that treatment a few times, and I'm like, we don't need to.
No, I don't need to see Randy.
Be investigating off. People's thighs and asses that close up. It's weird. It's a weird call. Tim saying, I think the biggest problem was Gail just kept tweeting through it. It's okay not to say something. Yeah, that's a big aspect of this. Like, of all people in the world, I don't think Gail Kim owes that many people an explanation. This also started with her saying that she's not a big fan of like extreme deathmatch spots, which is something I also agree with. Sorry to anybody who that offends. She did say it is an art when you get to that level, which that I think is debatable. I think if you start drawing lines that way, it gets a little bit dangerous. What I didn't like was, well, I'll say this, as someone who has been the main character of the internet for 24 hours a couple of times, it's extremely hard not to tweet through it. So I don't know if she's ever had that experience before. It's really, really, really hard for people to paint you a certain way when your comments are taken out of context or in bad faith, like just intentionally misrepresented. It's an awful feeling. Some of what people said was misrepresentative. Some people said like she hates Riho, and I'm like, Gail Kim is like 120 pounds soaking wet. Like, I don't think she's saying that. I think she's saying what she actually said, right? Which was that like the camera shot made her uncomfortable because Riho looks so tiny. And there's still things I disagree with about it, but it's very hard not to just want to explain what you meant over and over and over and again. And I will say too, like, it gets you absolutely nowhere. 'Cause I've done it. I did it. My account's locked for a reason. And the times that I haven't, have things have kind of like the storm passes on very quickly. My new conspiracy is that PWI and Andreas Hale from ESPN paid Gail Kim to tweet through it so that it would take off the heat from the PWI 500 and Andreas Hale giving the WrestlePalooza pay-per-view a C. So I think they were like, we don't want to be the main character of the internet, Gail. We will pay you to tweet through it. And she said, all right, give me the bag. I'm not employed right now. So that's my new conspiracy theory.
That is a Ryan level of a conspiracy.
I may have said that as a joke to the editor of PWI, who's a wonderful man. A wonderful man. Actually, I'll keep that story for me and Kevin. Actually, he's a wonderful person, though, and an ally to the highest extent of the law, I will say. Hello to Eric Freitz. Hello, Jesse Ozog. You're free from Ryan tonight. PWI. There were wrestlers from all over the world in it. Cody Rhodes was number one. Jon Moxley was number two. Gunther was number three. Hanger was number four. I forget who was number five, but Jey Uso was six. Swerve was seven. It was the usual suspects. Oh, Hirooki Goto was number five. I have an issue with that. An issue. I don't personally assign a lot of emotional weight to lists. I will say my favorite wrestler did get robbed because he won the G1 and the IWGP Heavyweight Championship twice in the evaluation period. That is one of the more dominant years you can have if you win the G1 and the world title twice. I feel like he should have probably been where Goto was. He definitely should have been ahead of Joe Hendry. And despite my biases, I think even my objective brain says if you win the G1 and the world championship twice, like, you should be in the top 10 for sure. Other than that, it's kind of, you're all tweaking preferences. Like, in no world, like, Ospreay was number 10. In no world do I think Jey Uso is a better wrestler than Will Ospreay. Do I think he might have had a bigger 2024 to 2025? That's arguable. The yeet craze was fucking insane. He can't hit a spear to save his goddamn life, but whatever. Like, the criteria that they use is kind of kayfabe and specific to the year that they're in. So I don't really have huge issues with it. I can just make my own list if I want to make a list. I made a list of lists as a joke. I was like, to-do lists, grocery lists, Letterman's top tens, Listerine. I had a huge list of lists.
Which list was number one on your list?
Grocery, then to-do. I know your kiss being on my list from Hall & Oates was on there. Listerine was on there. Letterman's top 10 was definitely on there. The PWI 500, I think, was number 10. I think I did that as a bit, but
the list always kind of are a weird subjective thing of, do you go by in-ring work? Do you go by how much a promotion put back in a wrestler in the storyline to just help get them over? I mean, there's so many weird factors beyond the actual in-ring stuff that, I don't know. I look at it just like, you know, matches and things like that, not necessarily like how much social media or, you know, global recognition you gain this year from developing a catchphrase or how much merchandise did you sell.
Sure. Even so, like, I did not like the Death Rider stuff, but John Moxley being number two, I'm like, in my head, it was Hangman's year, but then I look back and I'm like, oh, well, the evaluation period is from June to July, I think. June to July. So July to June. That sounds more accurate. So there's also things like that of everybody just looks at the year it's been so far or whatever. And it's like, that's not how that works. But I know what works here. Kylie's here. Hi, Kylie. We love you around these parts. Well, should we talk about this episode of Dynamite?
We should.
Should we dig in? With a fork and a knife.
No spoon?
Not yet. We'll introduce the spoon a little bit because we were digging in to some things, but we'll start with our fork and knife because we get some meat to kick us off with this world championship with Brodito and Gates of Agony. So we have Hangman backstage addressing Kyle Fletcher, which I liked before we get to this opener. And he says he was taken to the limit on Saturday, which I believe to be true watching this match. Like, the story was Kyle Fletcher kicks the shit out of Hangman. Watching it, I was like, this story is being very well told because it feels like Hangman's getting his shit kicked in for real right now. But Paige says he wants to see what Fletcher does next. I like what we get later in the show with that. But that they're in Pittsburgh tonight. And so Lee Moriarty is a Pittsburgh boy, and that he is going to defend his title against him tonight, which I thought was a really special choice. Like, I like that they did that because Lee is fantastic. And he's been kind of tucked away on ROH, but having incredible matches over there. So I'm glad that he got to shine a little bit. Any thoughts on our opening promo?
No, I like the fact that how they put Kyle over after the loss and kept building him up. I was a little confused about the title match. I know Lee's obviously a hometown guy. I just wasn't a fan of an open title challenge for the world title.
It is a little so tricky right now because MJF's going away to film. Your big three are out, even though they're faces. It's kind of tricky of like who's going to be the first like real challenger. But for a week after a pay-per-view, I don't mind it because it's like you got your world champion defending his title the week after a pay-per-view and you can't really snap a story together. But I'm with you of like I would rather the mid-card title be the workhorse open challenging type title. So I hear you on this.
Old-fashioned where I don't want my world title to be open title, open challenge, and I didn't want it to be in a weird like bomb of the first hour slot.
That's fair. This was a loaded episode, though, I will say. And I think it was cool that because they wanted to save the big announcement for the end, I thought it was a cool choice to have Chris defend at the end of the show instead, especially because we've seen such a concerted effort on AEW's part to men's and women's world championships are equal. But I'm with you. Like, that's not the vibe of the world title. But let's dig into this tag match. We have Ricochet, who is on commentary. I don't mean to sigh. I'm still getting my stamina back after having COVID for the fifth time. So if you hear me like sighing heavily. It's not a reflection of the show. I thought it was a very strong episode. I was very excited Ricochet was on commentary. If I could properly, I would. But if you love meaty matches, Brodito versus Gates of Agony is for you. I think Ricochet's great on commentary, and I find it so funny that the rep on him for so many years in AEW or in WWE was like, he doesn't have a character. Because I think it's a strength of his. Like, I understand the temptation by WWE to make him a superhero, because look what the guy can fucking do. But, like, he's really locked into this stuff, and I like him on commentary. I thought this was a lot of fun, but this match being exactly what you would want and expect, it ends with King doing a suicide dive on the outside while Bandido hits the 21-plex for the count. I love that they, like, switched roles there, that, like, Brody King's the high flyer and that you get a 21-plex from Bandido, because you would expect the strong guy to do the strong guy stuff and the high flyer to do the high flyer stuff. But this was a whole bunch of fun. I really like Gates of Agony. I think Toa Leona is smooth as hell, and it's not like they haven't gotten TV time before. They were Swerve's backup. They've been around, but, like, this is the first time that they've kind of felt important. And what you didn't see on the pay-per-view was they beat the Hurt Syndicate as well. So I'm hoping this means they're getting lined up for a Trios title shot. I think it would be a cool way to get gold on Ricochet too, since he came into the company wanting it and hasn't gotten it yet. But I thought this was fun as hell, and they have done a really good job of starting to turn this tag team division in the right direction after years of it being errant. Really fun stuff. That military press slam onto Khan into Leona was nuts. Like, they've done some fun stuff, and Brodito continues to have a surprisingly great tandem offense considering how long they haven't been a team. I'm really impressed by them. What says you about our opening match here?
I like the fact you called out how they kind of swapped in places as far as Bandido and Brody. I think that's kind of evident from, like, the first start of the match where Bandido won, like, you know, be the first one in the match and take on a bigger guy. Loves his hot tag. I thought he did a nice hot tag in the match.
Yes.
And also agree with you that this is by far been, in my opinion, the best thing that Gates of Agony have been a part of during their time. I mean, you said they've been a part of Swerve's backup and some other groups, but this feels like they have a really actual focus on them and not just, you know, being backup to someone else.
Yeah, it's cool. It's different. And I feel like there's a lot of people who, I love them, but there's a lot of people who find their presentation reads a little boring. So to put them with someone as ridiculous, quite frankly, as Ricochet, plus the in-ring contrast that you get with the three of them, I think is a really, really stellar call. Like, I like all of that. So
I thought they controlled the most of the match tonight. I mean, I thought they dominated a good portion of it.
They definitely did. And I like that too, because I feel like it's so hard to make Brody King, I don't know how to phrase this quite, but, like, Brody King, when you look at him, it's hard to believe that anyone's going to beat him. And then you see him do sentons and suicide dives and all these other moves, and you're like, but literally, how does anybody beat him? But he's really good at selling. And because Gates of Agony are bigger guys, I feel like you can make it work. And, like, he has a small tag team partner, right? So, but Jamie's saying the same thing, like, hard to make Brody vulnerable at all. It is, but he does a good enough job selling stuff. And sometimes you can buy into the idea that, like, his own momentum is too much for his own good sometimes. Like, if he's willing to make those moves as a big guy, sometimes high risk doesn't come with reward, right? So I think they have to be careful about the way that they agent matches for him. But I really am having fun with this Brodito tag team. And you're right, like, they did a good job tonight of letting GOA get to show what they can do. And I'm a fan of that. So decent little heel team brewing, and I'm excited about the tag division for the first time in a long time. But we move on to Miss Alicia Toot Friedman. Congrats to her and MJF. She's never going to get to go on a honeymoon, but it is what it is. Alicia is with the conglomeration. Mark Briscoe tells the Don Callis family to bring out their heaviest hitters that they got. They're in Pittsburgh tonight. He's ready to whip some ass. Alicia asks about the final man, and man, do they play coy about telling you it's going to be Orange Cassidy. You get Mark Briscoe saying that the word of the day is mystery, and no matter how hard you try to squeeze it out of him, he's not going to give up this juicy information, and that the future looks so bright, they're going to need to put shades on. Kyle O'Reilly also doing Kyle O'Reilly things the whole time. Makes me so happy. I was a big fan of Cool Kyle in NXT wearing his bucket hat. A lot of people want the violent artist, and I understand that. I'm okay with him being extremely silly and being a violent artist in the ring. I love me some KOR. I love that Willow is a part of it. I love that this group is just a franking group all the time. Like, there's just constantly members in and out. But it's fun. It's fun. And you know what? Let's cut to the chase. Let's loop that promo in with this Orange Cassidy return that we get later. Don Callis says that he's a great painter, and he unveils his previous masterpieces, which are Mel Coleman originals. Thank you very much. And he says he has another masterpiece he's going to unveil today. Surprise, surprise, under the curtain is Orange Cassidy walking through a 6-foot painting with his new Titantron, which has just like error messages in different languages. It's so funny. I obviously knew Orange Cassidy was coming back. They basically told us. But I like that they still threw in a little twist like this. This was a cute way to go about things. He genuinely looked excited to be there. Before we get into the match, let's talk about that promo and this segment that preceded the match. How do you feel about the Orange Cassidy return here?
I think it's needed. You know, we have some of the guys on the shelf are out right now with, you know, Ospreay and some others. So to get another guy like that back into the fold is a nice boost.
Yeah.
Conglomeration is what it is. It's Island of Misfit Toys, and I don't know where Roddy fits into all of it. I feel like he's always the awkward odd man out.
They are telling that story, which I like. Like, if you're not watching Collision, you don't see how much it's advancing. But, like, I love this thing where Kyle O'Reilly has this naivety about him. Like, I love that. Like, he just doesn't understand why we can't all just get along, and Roddy is clearly not into this idea. I feel like, you know, as soon as you lose a Swerve and an Ospreay and whatever to get Eddie Kingston back, to get Orange Cassidy back, to reunite Jurassic Express, they're doing a good job of saying we need balance in our product. We cannot have these dominant heels. I think you're going to be getting face Jon Moxley somewhat soon. Like, I think they'll let that percolate for a while with him and Garcia. But it feels more and more like that's where it's gonna head. I hope Claudio is the one that stabs him in the back, but let's talk some more conglomerating versus the Don Callis family. Like you said, Mark Briscoe won, so I like him wanting to kind of continue his momentum, but you got the pockets drop kick to Okada and Takeshita before the bell even rings, and I just love that because Okada has such a great drop kick that it would be like he gets taken out by a pockets one is really fun. You get Cassidy and Echicero in the ring, which is a singles match I now want to see, because that's one of those ones you don't really think of, but you're like, oh, I could see that being very, very fun to have like this hefty Lucha Tekker versus Orange Cassidy. I think would be very fun. But this ends with an orange punch and a portal bomb. 1, 2, 3. Mark Briscoe, Hologram, and Orange Cassidy conglomerate their little hearts out to win this. And then post-match, Kyle Fletcher comes out and he calls out Hologram, which is something I was so glad to see, because he says, you're 34-0, or are you 34 and scared of Kyle Fletcher? And the fact that Hologram hasn't had a title shot after being 34-0 is something that we can't ignore anymore. And I'm glad that they're finally paying it off. Losing to Kyle Fletcher is your first loss. There's no shame in that whatsoever. And we have this evil clown character who I think is going to pop up and probably play a part in this. I really like this use of talent, because we have yet to see Hologram in anything really meaningful in all those wins. I liked the match. This was to just make everybody feel good that Orange Cassidy is back, but I like the post-match even better. And I'm hoping they've got that like Title Tuesday show coming up in Jacksonville. If we get to Orange Cassidy versus Kyle Fletcher by that point, like he's working his way through, I think that could be a whole bunch of fun. But how did you feel about this match and the post-match that followed?
Fun little match. Like you said, it's really just a feel-good moment to see Orange back in the ring. I felt like it was a little predictable, obviously, with who's in the match and that, you know, Hector is going to get the pin. I thought maybe Orange would get the pin, but seeing what they did at the end of the match, it all made sense to build Hologram up. I didn't know we count tag matches and trios matches on your singles record. I mean, I get you're 34-0, but you have a lot of mixed tag and you have a lot of tag matches and multiple man tag matches. So, but it's a good way for him to lose to Kyle, like you said. You're losing to a guy who is just wrestling for the world title, and you're probably going to have shenanigans with the clone. So you get to lose your match, you need to be protected, and you can go off and have a feud with yourself.
Go feud yourself, as they say. Awesome. Some good stuff there. You know, I was really glad because I was looking at this mat, this like my card, my notes from this card and these matches, and I didn't know what I wanted to talk about first. And there was so much meaning in a lot of what happened tonight. Like the big announcement of the tag titles, Chris, we get a world title defense. Like this was a pretty loaded show for a follow-up to a pay-per-view. And a lot of times those shows suffer because A, everybody's injured with AEW because they just go so fucking crazy on pay-per-views. And B, like everybody's just, the people that can are just beat up and you're kind of opening this new can of worms for stories. So I was glad how substantive this was. And on top of that, like it's always such a blessing and a curse when you have a bunch of new champions at the same time because, you know, Chris Statlander, you have Hangman who's still newer in his reign. You have Kyle Fletcher, who, after winning the TBS title, mostly went into a world title picture. So you kind of are early in these runs. You have newer tag champions, not brand new. But it's a pretty fresh slate of champions, and I feel like they did a good job so far of, like, things feeling important. That's something I like to see on my TV shows. But Trey saying hi. Hello. Nice to see you here. Jamie corrected me before, too. I should have said the protostar. Kyle Fletcher. Yo soy a Chisero. We got a video package narrated by Jack Perry, who is so back, saying the things that we love most can be lost. Dreams can turn into nightmares. But we see the footage of Perry reviving Luchasaurus again, which I saw someone ask, like, does that mean that Jack Perry cured his pneumonia in kayfabe? But... Jurassic Express will be on the big 6-year anniversary show next week, which will be a nice, like, nostalgia-y, but also present moment. I'll say this, like, I was doing some social media stuff for Fightful this weekend. The clip of that picked up more traction than most stuff. It was like that and Beth Phoenix return were the two clips that everybody was the most excited about, which was, I didn't expect that. I wasn't surprised people were excited, but I was surprised they were that excited, which is great. Any thoughts on this video package? Are you happy to see Luke Perry's son?
Always.
Back in action.
You know, I was a little... I love a good nostalgia thing. You know, like, it's been 5 years. We're in the 5-year anniversary. It's nice to have them come back together. You know, with Luchasaurus wasn't really doing much. Now that, you know, the whole patriarchy thing kind of out in the wind with, you know, Nick Wayne's injury. And it gives Jack Perry something to do. It was an interesting way to turn them both face again really quick.
Yes.
I mean, it's a stark turnaround from what Jack Perry was doing when he left. And I don't know how you explain it other than his little promo, but I don't know if that's enough of a justification for me, but...
Yeah, I think it. I'm somewhere in between where I need a little more than we got today, but I don't need a huge, like, right, big overarching creative effort. Like, I'm everybody that he was aligned with are different people now. So I don't need him like, wait, but you abandoned your friends and whatever. Like, I liked that the Young Bucks in BTE said, who's even in the Elite anymore? Like, is it just us now? I don't know. So I'm kind of fine with moving past it as long as we get some sort of context for it, which I'm thinking for the 6-year anniversary show, we probably will. But oh my God, Claudio finally won a match. He's like my favorite. And this was meaty deliciousness between him and Will Hobbs. This was a really, I thought, a really fun match. I loved watching this. I love watching Claudio work. Like, it never gets old seeing what he can do. That gut-wrench suplex from him is ridiculous. Like, he does so many things right in the ring. I really hope that he gets a massive payoff and is the one to turn on Moxley, like, when that falls apart, because he's been taking a lot of losses. He's been kind of lost in the vision of all this. I think there's something super fun if he takes Wheeler Yuta with him and you have Mox and Danny Garcia on different sides. It's like both the fathers took their sons with them a little bit. I feel like I love heel dickhead Claudio, like espresso drinking asshole Claudio. I love that character so much, and I like him as a heel a lot. And I feel like it could be really productive, and somebody should get some sort of payoff from the Death Riders angle in addition to Hangman winning the title. So that's where I hope it's going. But I like Claudio getting the win here. I thought this match was a ton of fun because they're like both different types of insanely strong in a way. Like, they move a lot differently considering their strength. So I had a blast watching this. I don't know about you, but meaty, meaty, meaty. Meaty tag match to open. Meat match here, too.
It's funny you say that, because, like, in my notes, I made a note of this was a very much a hamburger helper of a meat match.
It was.
And from a person who grew up watching a lot of wrestling in, you know, the mid to late 80s into the 90s, it felt very much like one of those kind of matches where it's just a lot of big power moves, a lot of slams, a lot of backdrops, a lot of, you know, gut-wrench suplexes. Just, you know, fundamental old-school power moves. So I enjoyed every minute of it. I could watch him wrestle, you know, best out of 7. And yeah, I think having Pac show up and help kind of give Claudio a win was nice. Him, yes, and his weird haircut. But yeah.
It was nice to have Pac back here. And it followed, like, we had this absolutely monster lariat from Hobbs and he pulls down the straps and then Pac shows up as like a nice sequence of events to happen, because you felt like it felt like Hobbs was genuinely ready to put this thing away, as opposed to like, and then who showed up. Like, I like that Pac was opportunistic about his return here as well. So some fun stuff. And then post-match you get Samoa Joe running down to run him off. And Hangman also coming in to help make the save here. So some good stuff. I would like to see more Will Hobbs in singles action, I think. But this was fun. This was a loaded episode. This was a really loaded episode. And that moves us, wow, close to the end already. We do get this incredible MJF promo. I thought it was incredible, at least. I love the run that he's been on, and he loses to Mystico and he loses to Mark Briscoe back to back. And he says, you know, ever since I lost my title, I've been playing MJF. I haven't really been MJF, and I'm disgusted at who I've come back to be. And he goes through everything. He says Adam Cole broke his ankle and broke his heart. And he even says, like, I know that sounds cheesy, but it's true. He did a very good job in this, in my opinion, of just being, like, I love how angry he is at everybody else, but today he was like, and I'm fucking mad at myself and I need to go away. Like, it felt very authentic of like moments when you hate yourself. It kind of like resonated a little bit of like, in moments when you don't like yourself, you kind of feel this way. You like start to evaluate everything that's ever happened to you, and you don't know if you're going to get out of it, and you don't know how you're going to get out of it. But considering this is like a pivot to him probably going away to film Violent Night 2, which is kind of a cool role for him to get as a Happy Gilmore follow-up. To do like a Christmas horror movie is a pretty wild next choice. I thought this was really well done. I like that they filmed it when he still had the tax in him, one which was fake because he eats it. But like even the him walking away shot, he's got all these tacks in the bottom of his boots. And I also think it leads to intrigue about how he comes back, who he comes back with. Will he bring Alex Hammerstone with him? Will he just show up an angrier version of himself? There's a lot of questions for what his return looks like because he still has that contract as well. So what do you think of this MJF promo that we got? I really liked it. I think he's been on a good run of work. Excuse me.
No, I really enjoyed the promo. I like these promos from him that are a little different than his usual ones where he's talking to his opponent. This is very much more introspective. And, you know, as a character, we know how much he is insecure about himself and always questioning himself. So I like the fact that he's realizing that he has imposter syndrome of himself right now. Maybe all the acting he's been doing in Happy Gilmore and other movies, he's been, you know, acting the role of MJF. So I like the idea of him going away for a while and then coming back. You know, kind of like when he came back and, you know, he kind of shed the whole double mask thing and he had that big return. Now this is kind of another evolution of his character. And if it goes a little bit more grittier and a little bit more sadistic and American Psycho, then I'm all for it.
I feel like the most violent we saw him was his feud with CM Punk. And I would love that version of him to be the version that comes back. Like that was, they did some, there were like clips that were on my timeline of whichever fucking app I was on. I was like, they fucking went places with that feud. Like I remember it being great. And I remember a lot of the promo work, but I forgot like him choking Punk out with the Crimson Mask. And like, there was some really, really good stuff. And he was so, just like hyper fixated on getting his childhood revenge back. Like that was such nasty work. I would love to see that from Max too, but the chat kind of agreeing with this, that like it's relatable in ways. It's his vulnerability is what makes the heel persona great. I like that. This is not like we're in a city and you're all fat and smell bad and your sports team suck. Like I appreciate that stuff from Max, but when it's contrasted with deeper layers from stuff, he's in his bag. That's my take on it. And also a great use of two MJF losses, right? Like he lost to the biggest star in Mexico right now. That match was incredible. That was like an 80s match. Like the heat was nuts. He has a different connection with the crowd as a heel in Mexico. It's just nuts. And then the Briscoe one was very much like, and I'm going away for a while. He's this like everyman babyface that everyone loves. He can pull off this ultra violent stuff. If I'm going to go out on a note, like him losing in a match that is a Mark Briscoe type match, I feel like is a great way to protect him. This is some bullshit I've been on, is what protected losses mean. Cause I'm so sick of it meaning, well, it's behind the ref's back and it's, you know, oh, he got missed it. Like, I like protected losses that are just somebody else being smarter, or like one of my favorite match finishes ever. It was so simple. Danielson locks in the Umaplata on Dax Harwood and Dax can't find the ropes because the Umaplata's locked in and it's over his fucking eyes. And so he's reaching for the ropes and he has no choice to tap because he can't do anything. So simple. Like, I feel like we go so far into what that means. And I feel like MJF losing a monster tack and tables match is fine because that's not his wrestling match. Like, that's Mark Briscoe's wrestling match. So,
yeah, I'll take those protected losses over, you know, a distraction or a flash roll up. You know, I'll take, give me a little, like I said, give me some more layers to it.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people felt like the Hangman match was overproduced. So seeing these less produced ones back-to-back nights, beautiful. Take it all day. You know what else I'll take, Joe? Finally getting AEW women's tag titles.
Oh, I was going to say the cure for COVID. Okay.
I mean, honestly, I really want these tag titles. If we could prioritize Cure for COVID over that, I would take it for selfish and unselfish reasons. That's just for the betterment of the world. But if I can't have that, I will take the announcement that we got tonight. We have Tony Khan saying that he feels like AEW has had a very strong 2025, that he's proud of the work that's gone into the women's division. And he's announces that there are finally AEW Women's World Tag Titles, and he throws it to Renee, who unveils them, and I think they look great. I liked the look of these a lot, especially for tag ones. I feel like you could have a little more personality, but I'm a big believer that your world title belt should be gold. So the fact that there was gold with color under, like, that's a look that I like. So I'm a big fan of that. And sounds like there's going to be a tournament, but we don't have brackets announced. I thought for sure we were going to get Britt Baker showing up here, but we did not. So I'm guessing that they're really just going to not use her. but I'm intrigued by this, especially with Tony losing, because my wrestling lizard conspiracy brain went off. I think it's time for Mercedes to start losing some belts. Tony just lost hers. Does Mercedes' downfall turn into her and Tony Storm tagging to win the women's tag belts? The two biggest stars, arguably in the entire company, certainly in the women's division. I don't think so, because I don't think the timing's right. And I think if Mercedes wins those belts, maybe there's another free agent in about 8 months that they might be going after with that. I think Bailey is someone that they could realistically target as a free agent. And I also think it would be good to give it to other people. Now, we do have this Willow thing that we're going to talk about in this, because FTR talks a bunch of shit about Adam Copeland and Beth Phoenix. Adam Copeland and Christian have a moment backstage where they're like, man, that match was what it was. And Cope says, I got to go away because this is, again, my family's involved in this. And Christian says, I don't have a family anymore. Go protect yours. And Cope says, you got a family. Your family's my family. What he doesn't say is, I'm actually going to film this Percy Jackson show that I'm a part of, which I think is what's happening. But after FTR talks all the shit about Beth and Cope and Christian, Willow comes out and she's like, hold on, Beth Phoenix is a trailblazer. That's my girl. She's why people like me got into wrestling, which I think means babes with the power. I feel like Beth Phoenix is the one that kind of spearheaded a lot of that. So I'm wondering if they're going to be tag team in this tournament, because we got Chris is preoccupied here. So who do you think is going to be your inaugural tag team champions?
I'm trying to figure out how many teams are going to put me in this tournament. I'm thinking maybe eight teams. Eight would be a good number, maybe a reasonable number.
I think that's fair. Eight is probably good.
So let's see. Let's say we have Megan Bain and Penelope.
Sure.
Let's say Anna Jay and Ty.
Sure.
Let's do Willow and TBD.
Okay.
I'm trying to think who else.
The streets are saying Deanna and Taya. And by the streets, I mean Deanna saying that.
Julia and
I don't know what Thunder Rosa's deal is, because I feel like you could actually do Thunder and Deanna very easily, but I think she's still injured. Julia and Sky.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if it would be a heel or a heel or a face team.
Tony and Mina is a good shout.
We have face tag team champion, kind of, for the men. So maybe heel win the inaugural ones.
Renegade Twins is a great shout because they're actually a tag team.
They are.
I mean, it would be really interesting if you just gave it to Willow and Beth. I don't hate that as like an incoming thing for Beth to have an immediate legacy and Willow to immediately be a champion doesn't suck. Anna and Ty is a good shout too, because they have been here for a long time and they've been a duo for a long time. They were a tag team before belts existed in a division. Athena and Mercedes having an interesting Twitter exchange. I mean, it's so tempting to put Mercedes in it because she has 9 belts and she's so close to that Ultimo Guerrero situation. But I feel like it gets crowded, and the point of this is to help other people along. If they lost earlier, that could be fun. Like, if she's on the other side of Tony and Mina, that could be very fun.
And I was thinking, like, Athena, like, wouldn't Athena and Billy be in it together? Even though I know Athena's, you know, they're both doing a lot of single things right now. But.
They are. Well, and it's tricky, too, because I think Fightful reported. I should know this. But I'm pretty sure Fightful reported that, like, Athena's taking some in-ring time off. It's really, honestly, it's so interesting because you could go so many directions, right? You could have Jamie Hayter and Queen Amanada team up. That would be fun as hell. Mercedes and Harley would be a really fun. Because, like, you could also, they could also lose, and it, like, Harley takes the pin and nothing is lost. Nothing is lost. Hayter and Windsor would be fun as fuck. Yeah.
Someone just suggested.
There's a lot of possibilities.
Harley and the Puppet.
Well, yes. Yeah. Harley and Mercedes, yeah. Minnie Monet and Harley Graham, I think is the way that you build that bracket out.
we don't need an iguana puppet here. We have, you know, Harley and...
Yeah, we don't... We got Minnie Monet and... What's cool is, like, none of these... We're talking about a lot of teams and none of them feel like compensatory picks. Like, and they could, if they wanted to do a 16 bracket, they won't, but like, say they wanted to do 12 and they just pull some people from ROH back up. That could be fine too, but like they have the depth to do it now, which I think is what they were waiting on. So exciting shit. And then we move along to our fighting women's world champion, Chris Statlander. And I feel like they did a really good job with this. I feel like they added some good drama into this, even though obviously Chris was going to win. But the way it was put together was a nice, like, that in the moment, they gave you some fun moments of, like, maybe they will. Especially because you have all of this Death Rider stuff hanging out. And Wheeler Yuta comes out again, is in Chris Statlander's ear. And Chris uses the seatbelt pin again, but after the match, you get Wheeler coming to hold up her arm, and she takes out Wheeler Yuta with a lariat that says, "I work in the same company as Nigel McGuinness." That is quite something. She gives Mox the double middle finger, and he, like, I don't know if this was a character choice or if this was his actual reaction. He could not help but be charmed by her being like, "Ah!" She was in his face with those middle fingers, and he was smirking so hard. And she off into the sunset she goes. She's protecting Harley with her. Maybe they're in the tag tournament too, just as a team. That loses earlier on, but Darby challenges Moxley to an I Quit match after all of this, as he is wielding fire, as Darby Allin just tends to do from time to time. This was all really good stuff. Like, I didn't know how I felt about Chris winning the title in the moment. Seeing Chris as champion today, I was like, this kind of fucking rules. Like, I'm so glad to see her, like, with the belt. She feels like a certain champion, even though the win wasn't a certain champion, and she's winning with a flash pin. Like, I'm hoping this sets up Marina and her. I think that could be a really fun thing. I liked everything we got. I thought the match was put together well, even though the outcome was inevitable.
Yeah, I thought Mia did a really nice job working over Statlander's knee. She had some really nice vicious things she did, like dropping the knee on the floor and some other things like that. know, Mina's shortcomings are always playing to the crowd too much, which caught up to her. And I like the Statlander story of, you know, the various like red herrings throughout the night of, you know, Renee asking her about the Death Riders relationship, you know, Yuta being in her ear too much, having that tease of her looking at Harley like she's going to attack Harley. I like all that in this match as well. She's added something to her title reign so far and gave her a little bit more depth. And I think the fact that she, you know, had that moment where she was so defiant in Moxley's face, I think that's what he's been telling her, though. He's been saying, like, don't let anyone tell you who you are, who you can, or who you aren't, or who you should be. And he's been the one, like, they're the ones that try to, like, tell her, like, oh, you're one of us. You should be with us. And, you know, she stood up for herself, much like he respects Darby for doing what Darby does.
This is why I think he's going face, not imminently, but sooner than later. Because, like, he is seeing, it's so weird because he pulled Garcia over to the bad guy side. But, like, I think that mentorship lasts through this face turn because people actually really do like Danny Garcia. They just wanted to see him actually do stuff. But, like, he likes Chris Statlander. He was smirking today. He likes Darby Allin. He loves Darby Allin. He said so in a coffin match. So I feel like the fact that he likes all these guys and is trying to challenge them to step up rather than say, I'm putting your egos into the ground, I think we're starting to pivot a little bit.
But I do agree with Tim in the chat about Darby and getting way too close to the front row with a flamethrower.
I felt that way too, but I was like, I also don't know flamethrower etiquette. I don't throw flames, so I don't really know how this goes.
You should work on that. Doesn't Nigel do fireballs?
He does. That's not his vibe of magic.
Hmm.
That I've seen.
Well, I know. It's more of a Jericho thing, right? So, you know.
That is more of a Jericho thing. I just realized we didn't talk about Hanger and Lee.
Not in depth. We kind of glossed over a little bit.
We did. It was a really good match. It was fun to see Hanger do some more tactical stuff. And this was just about Lee getting a shot in his hometown. But Hangman picking up the W with this, of course. If there's any notes you want to make, that's fine. But I had fun watching Hangman work a different style than is normally his wheelhouse. But this was all about Lee Moriarty. And he's fantastic. Like, he always looks great in matches. You know, this stole my Tekker heart from the bottom to the top. I'm always going to love a technical wrestling match. But Lee's really, really good. And, like, his finisher being named the Border City Stretch, I was like, he deserves one of these in Pittsburgh. Anything that you wanted to comment on yourself?
No, I just assume they're kind of similar to the Heyman Fletcher match, where you're really trying to, you know, prop up the younger guy who's been around for a minute, and, you know, having Lee Moriarty shine in his hometown was just a nice way to put him over. And Lee did a really nice job of controlling the match with his style of wrestling. To your point, you know, he was able to do a lot of fun counters to Heyman, like you said, to get into the Border City Stretch and some other submissions. But yeah, it was fun. It was nice to see him. Otherwise, I don't see him very much.
Yeah. Indeed. Indeed. Well, that wraps us up here at the Mark Order Podcast. It goes so much faster when Ryan's not here. It goes even faster when we decide not to play commercials and we zip through things like this. But I overall thought tonight was a really fun episode. Like, this was pretty chock full of a lot. And the big announcement about the women's tag titles absolutely rules. Like, this roster has beyond earned it. And I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled by that. But any closing thoughts? And in closing, where can the good people find you?
Closing thoughts is, I agree. I thought it was going to be a lighter show after the pay-per-view, but there weren't that many talk segments. There's a lot of action, and yeah, it was nice to have some big announcements that were actually a big announcement.
Yes, that's true. We didn't get like a bait and switch important announcement, which I like. On a scale of like one to Creed, where does this rate?
Hmm. a scale of
did it
one
take you higher?
You know,
to a place where blind will see.
It was higher. It was above one. Okay. I'm trying to think of other free song references. What if I said 3.5 out of 4?
Okay. Okay. Is there anything we can do to hold you now?
Ooh.
And that you're not 6 stars from the edge?
I'm thinking.
Maybe 3.5 stars ain't so far down, you know? Home now!
Oh, wow. Time to go home.
We only did an hour tonight, but it was the longest hour of your life just then. Joe, I just feel like tonight was great, but there's something missing in my life, and it's not just lung capacity. I just don't know where I can read about wacky and zany serials, and it breaks my heart, because I would love to mitigate the risk around buying cereal by reading what other people have to think about it. But I don't think such a thing exists, and it hurts my feelings.
Oh. Well, lucky for you, there is such a thing.
What?
There is. I know.
Oh, I wish I knew the author, because that would be so cool.
I barely know the author. I have to go find myself.
Hey, go find yourself.
Go find yourself, yeah. Yeah, so you can read my serial reviews at my serial review blog, which is linked in my social media profile. And I'm on social media at _AsianJoe. Should we plug Ryan and his history blog?
There you go. I feel like he doesn't deserve it, but we will. Because he's too good to show up for us,
We'll
show up for him. Here for history. A Ryan Sullivan story. It's not the history of his life, but he has moved into the world of YouTube. He edited a thing, which if you've edited any videos in your life, you know is annoying. So even if you're not interested in history, go support Ryan and his YouTube video. I learned a lot, and I'm not like a history buff. He does genuinely make it very accessible. So it's a shorter video. You can enjoy it. You'll learn a lot. Kind of an undiscovered gem for even people that are into history from my understanding. So some wild shit that happened in this country and continues to, but go over there and support. It's a well done video. And this is an important part of the next chapter in his life as he's pursuing history education. So check it out over there. If I can breathe, you're going to get more YouTube content coming up this week, but taking things a day at a time, but I am back in my regular schedule at Fightful. I will have the No Mercy review this weekend. We will see how that goes. Obviously, Uncle Jesse's going to hate it because he's all have mercy. And NXT's like, no. But we'll be reviewing that and other pathetic invasion angles like we got last night. Nothing says invasion angle like your entire roster wrote a strongly worded tweet and then showed up in dribs and drabs and then invaded in the last match. But whatever. They're going to do what they're going to do. I'm going to review it on Tuesday nights and on PLEs. Friday nights doing the SmackDown post show as well. Mondays on Fightful Select reviewing Raw. Thursdays I take off. But Wednesdays right back here at the Mark Order Podcast. Thank you so much for joining. Oh yeah, 1LT Photo made the thumbnail art for Ryan, and I believe his logo as well. So support him, support 1LT Photo, support the friends over here. But we are gonna get out of here. Have a safe and wonderful rest of your wrestling week. Goodbye and good night.
Bang. Outro overlay. I gotta scroll down here. Hold on, give me a break. Oh, where's the outro? There it is.
This concludes the Mark Order podcast. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming. Join the Mark Order.